AM Columbus, W224 EG Madison, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. If he wins a second term, says former President Trump, he wants to make in vitro fertilization free for families.
Because we want more babies, to put it very nicely.
Mr. Trump did not detail how he would fund it or how it would work. Vice President Kamala Harris wrapping up her two-day campaign swing in southeastern Georgia with a rally in Savannah.
We have some hard work ahead of us, but we like hard work. Hard work is good work.
One of the handful of F-16 warplanes that Ukraine got from its Western partners has crashed, say Ukraine Army officials. The pilot died. They say it happened when Russia launched a major missile and drone barrage at Ukraine. Some were shot down by F-16, say the Ukrainians. Health officials in Massachusetts have confirmed a second case of Eastern equine encephalitis in a person. It's a brain inflammation from a mosquito bite. This is ABC News.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. COVID-19 activity is running high in parts of Wisconsin. That's based on wastewater data, hospital admissions, and lab testing. State epidemiologist Tom Haupt says late summer COVID spikes are now the norm.
That could be due to the fact that people's immunity is starting to wane from last fall's vaccinations or have been infected before.
The new booster shot is rolling out, and Haupt says it should be effective against the current strains going around. Governor Evers' changes to school spending in the state budget will stand. Dane County Judge Stephen Elke ruled this week the changes Evers made are allowed under state law. Evers used his partial veto to transform spending on school literacy into a general spending increase for the Department of Public Instruction. He also cut grants for school vouchers and private schools. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
This is news from WMDX Madison. I'm Savannah Tome Olson. We're counting down the days until school starts. This year, there's a change for Madison middle schoolers. They're starting classes later at 9 a.m. According to the American Psychological Association, later start times mean more sleep, better performance in classes, and improved mental and physical health. With that change, some middle schoolers won't have crossing guards. Granted, some didn't have them before this school year, but according to a report from WKOW, parents found out 2 weeks before classes begin that their students will no longer have crossing guards at schools like Velma B. Hamilton Middle School. Parents are particularly worried about busy intersections, like where Mineral Point meets Sego Road. One parent told the station they see unsafe driving there often, so adding their kids into the mix without the watchful eye of an adult makes them nervous. Important to know here that the crossing guard program is not run through the school district. It's under the umbrella of the Madison Police Department. And that's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tome Olson. This is WMDX News.
Big inning leads to a big win in Milwaukee. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska with sports. The Brewers used a 5-run fifth inning to win 5-3 over the San Francisco Giants Wednesday night. Manager Pat Murphy said that they got some timely hitting in the middle of the game.
I like the fact that we got a big 2-out hit, opposite field ground ball by Churio, and then Perkins, who had a great night. And then Contreras put an exclamation point on it.
William Contreras hit a 2-run home run in the inning, while Freddy Peralta struck out 8 in 6 innings of work as Milwaukee climbed to 20 games over 500. The series finale is Thursday afternoon. The Green Bay Packers cut their roster down to 53 this week, including making some big decisions at kicker and running back. The Packers open the season a week from tomorrow against the Eagles in Brazil. And the Wisconsin Badgers kick off their football season tomorrow night against Western Kentucky at 8 p.m. For Civic Media Sports, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Scattered showers and thunderstorms this evening, some severe with large hail, damaging wind gusts, and heavy rainfall. Rain diminishing overnight, lows upper 60s. Pleasant temps and sunshine ahead for Friday and the holiday weekend. Right now it's 80.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app. John Peterson and Gordy Young.
On our next program, Rocker will be back in the studio with a Max Inc. preview.
And believe it or not, we might just have an opinion or two.
The John and Gordy Show, weekday mornings 6 till 8. This is Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number is 855-752-4842. Man, what a night. Just an announcement, though, just in case everybody knows. Yes, President or ex-President TFG, you know, Mr. Trump might be coming in to step over Busted Pencils. I know. We put in some complaints. But no, if he gets up there and speaking in lacrosse tonight, just if you hear Busted Pencils take out right then, we will still continue live on our socials. But Civic Media will be covering President Trump if he and when he comes to actually speak. Right now we're hearing he's delayed in Michigan. And so if he can get out of Michigan and get over to Wisconsin and get to lacrosse, then Civic Media will be bringing some of that coverage. But for now, it's Busted Pencils. It's fully leaded education talk. Hey, just a reminder to be a voter Tuesday, September 17th. National Voter Registration Day. Plan to check your voter registration then to be sure you're ready for November 5th. And yeah, one more time, Civic Media is getting recombobulated. Dan Schaefer and his beloved Milwaukee News and Opinion publication, the recombobulation area, join the Civic Media Radio Network. Johnny, are you there, my friend?
Well, we can give it a try. How's it sound?
Yeah, you're there. You're there, man. There you are.
Hey, it's always good to have a second soundboard in your backpack. You know, I got my travel gear with me. I'm live from my classroom today, Tim. So you know the really expensive soundboard is useless to us, but the little Vocaster one is carrying its weight. I'm glad I'm here with you.
Oh, that little Vocaster.
And I'm glad to be with these guests tonight.
Absolutely. I tell you what it is. It's Wisconsin Public Education Network night. We got them here. We got some special guests. We're going to be talking everything dealing with Wisconsin. Well, actually, we're going to really dig into that topic, referendum. Why do we need them? What's happening? You know what, though? Jenny Hofschutte, how are you, Jenny? We want to say hello to you first because you've been on Busted Pencils before. So welcome back, Jenny. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back. It's Hofschulte.
Hofschulte,
Correction's sake there. Yeah. But I'm a Milwaukee Public Schools mom of 20 years and a proud public education advocate. And I work with the Wisconsin Public Education Network, and we love being on Busted Pencils. So thanks for always hosting members of our team.
And you're bringing a guest with you tonight. Why don't you do the introductions for us there, Jenny?
Well, I'm just going to tip it right over to Tom because it's not often that we get some administrators to step to the plate with us. So, Tom?
Sure. Tom. Thank you. My name's Tom Wormuth. I'm the district administrator in the Adams Friendship Area School District. I'm starting my 41st year in education this fall. So very excited and have served two school districts over the last 12 or 13 years as superintendent. And both of those districts have basically survived from referendum to referendum.
So Tom, 40 some years in public education, all in Wisconsin too?
No, I was in Vermont and Illinois for a little while as well, but I was born and raised in Madison, taught in Wausau and Middleton, and had a variety of positions in the River Valley School District prior to coming to Adams Friendship.
Well, welcome to Busted Pencils, both of you, Tom and Jenny. Yeah, it's Fully Leaded Education Talk, and we love having Wisconsin Public Education Network on the show once a month, always making sure we can bring everything that's happening in Wisconsin public education. So, team, though, you know, before we get started on the referendum, though, just wondering how you guys have been feeling. We want to continue the conversation a little bit. The Democratic National Convention joyfulness that we've been celebrating. Jenny, Tom, any thoughts? What did you think about what's happening right now? You know, Walz being the vice presidential, Harris. Jenny, what do you think?
So first, I'll start with the fact that we are an informal and nonpartisan alliance of parents and educators and school board members. if my personal opinion were to slip into this a little bit, it is really refreshing to have a full-throated public education support coming from a national stage. This current administration, in our opinion, has been kind of mild, the Biden-Harris administration, and has been kind of mild on public schools, but also not working hard to dismantle or destroy public schools as the previous administration. So we at WPN are feeling pretty good about the joy. And, you know, we have a little saying around WPN that our job is to help close the joy gap so that all kids have joyful education experiences.
I love that.
We kind of feel like she might have borrowed a line from us.
Yeah, I think that, guys, you know, just send their campaign a little note just in case. They'll mention Wisconsin Public Education Network next time there. Wait, they're doing a press conference tomorrow on CNN. Maybe you can get them to say, hey, Wisconsin Public Education Network, thanks for the joy. Tom, your thoughts on the Democratic and again, either of the committees or the conventions. Republican convention was a couple weeks before that. You know, we talk about this, you know, the public education, it's on the ballot.
It really is. And right now, based on what we saw in the DNC, I'm very hopeful. And that's the term that I'm using, in addition to the joy that I believe was felt during that convention.
Yeah, equal opportunity too. We've pointed this out, and Jenny, we said, you know, the Biden, I guess the way you say it's like they haven't outright gone for destroying, and it's been kind of, you know, nice to take a break. But when you look back over 2000 through 2000 through 2024, it's been a rough ride for public education, whether it's been a Democratic administration or a Republican administration, largely around the whole high stakes testing privatization movement, where it seemed like for the longest time, both parties were perfectly fine with advocating some form of destruction towards our public schools. Johnny Lupinacci, you're nodding away there.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, we've been talking about it, Tim, for weeks, and we can go even further back. And so just excited to, again, I think Jenny put it really well, you know, optimism. And I'm still reeling. I love that closing the joy gap.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, hey, let's see. Can we have an administration that really advocates for public schools? Not just one that doesn't harm it, because we know that ticket, right? But one that pushes it further and strengthens it so that the good work that folks like Tom and Jenny and so many others are doing, right, is you know, amplified in so many ways. And it reaches really ultimately all those children who deserve and really to strengthen our democracy need, you know, a really good public education.
Yeah. It's busted pencils. Jenny, jump in there.
Oh, I was just going to say, too, like, to lean into the expertise that already exists in our schools. Like, we sometimes hear political figures, you know, wringing their hands and woe is me-ing about test scores and this and that and things that are wrong with our schools. But we don't spend a lot of time leaning into the people who are doing the work every day in the building. I mean, if you ask a teacher which kids in her class are struggling, he or she does not need a standardized test to tell you that, right? Mm-hmm. And if we really drilled into root issues for students and when students aren't as well performing, it's very little to do about what happens actually in that school box. And like, it has more to do with what the community's commitment is to our kids. And that starts, you know, in the White House and comes all the way through each state, so.
Yeah, definitely. So, Jenny, just a quick reminder, though, to Wisconsin Public Education Network. Just remind listeners again, who are you? What are you guys doing? 10 years, you can go into that. Just had a summit. Give us a little refresher on the Wisconsin Public Education Network.
So the Wisconsin Public Education Network is actually a project of the Wisconsin Alliance for Excellent Schools, and it's a C3 nonpartisan nonprofit organization. And we are supported by voluntary contributions and partnerships around the state. And our sort of informal crew of people and our paid organizers around the state are people who are committed to ensuring public schools are great in every area of the state and that they have the resources they need, and to help people not only promote and advocate for their own local schools, but to see the bigger picture and how the state influences what happens in our schoolhouses, and to draw stronger coalitions of advocacy. There's a lot of people that had been doing this like sort of in their own silos around the state, no pun intended, in the dairy state. And Act 10 was a real watershed moment in our state, obviously, when our teachers union was busted and other really harsh mechanisms of politics were used against our public schools. So about 10 years ago, all those silos kind of decided, like, why aren't we working together in a more concerted effort to raise these issues and help inform the public about what's going on, and to help them see the picture bigger than sometimes the snazzy headlines, things the media wants to focus on.
So, and Jenny, too, 10 years, right? Now, this is 10 years. In fact, you know, Jess and I, we had a great time at the 10-year summit right there. I wonder if you want to do a little highlights. What was your best part of the 10-year summit?
I think some of the best part of our 10-year summit was just the number of people who showed up that day. You know, we had just over 250 registrants and we served over 300 lunches. You know, so people showed up in Madison area. And the nice thing about our summer summit, it is a conference. It's a one-day conference with a workshop, but it is a place for school administrators, school board members, regular parent advocates, educators, the neighbors across the street from the school who want to come and see what's going on that day. I did meet that lady in Madison. just curious about what was up with our cute yard signs. But it's a place for anyone who feels they have a stake in our public schools, which in a democratic society is everyone is welcome at that meeting to learn about policy, advocacy, and the needs of our kids. So that was the exciting part for me, is that it isn't a conference that's just for administrators or just for educators. It's for all of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We said, and Jess and I just really, man, we got to meet some incredible people. Tom, real quick, how often or how your involvement with Wisconsin Public Education Network beyond the district work you're doing?
I've been involved with WPEN for probably 7 or 8 years, both in the River Valley School District and in Adams Friendship, helping facilitate community engagement around referendum activities.
Mm. So that's been kind of your focus on the topic we'll be talking about today, the referendum and how they work. Johnny, man, we've said we've covered this. We keep going back over it because we have to, because
it's important. Still,
you know, because we're talking about funding and how do we get there? Why is the referendum? You know, we always bring up my neighbor always wants to know why does he have to vote to pay more taxes? Well, we've got great guests, Wisconsin Public Education Network, Jenny and Tom, here to help us break down, understand referendum very specifically too in Wisconsin, how we get there, and really, man, just check it out. Hey, make sure too, if you're watching Facebook, yeah, you can be checking us out. If you're on the Twitter X, that's what we call it here, the Twitter X, you can be getting us following the Civic Media link. And YouTube too, you can be watching us live, because everybody knows that watching Busted Pencils is the fun. Text us. Call us 855-752-4842. More with Jenny and Tom, Wisconsin Public Education Network. Hold tight.
You're listening to Mad Radio WMDX, Madison's home for the Todd Allbaugh Show.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Co-founder of the Lincoln Project, Rick Wilson.
Trump is now pre-gaming for Republican elections boards at the county and state levels across this country to try to put their thumb on the scale for Trump. And if they don't win on that front, they may resort to violence again, which is why at the Lincoln Project, our goal is not to beat Trump. Our goal is to beat Trump like a rented mule. Our goal is to beat Trump so bad that his bruises have bruises.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Out here in the middle of all these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. And sometimes, that's how it feels when you're going through tough times. Trouble sleeping, your mind racing, So what do? We get help. There are people in our community who are here for us. Sometimes just talking to someone can make all the difference in the world. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Mad Radio 92.7 FM, home of the John and Gordy Show.
Everybody knows there's a revolution when you're a teenager. You're looking for it. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Johnny just shared with me, we call it the Twitter X, the Twix. Johnny, I did not know that that's what the kids are calling Twitter nowadays, Twix.
Yeah, I've been hearing it too in some of the socials. We've said it, Tim. We've stumbled and said, hey, we got to tweet that out. Or, you know, what do you call it? What a great kind of thing to call a post on Twitter was a tweet. But
right.
The kids these days, my students have said, oh, you mean a Twix. And I thought that was interesting. Little spin and morph on stuff. So if you tweet something now, I guess it's called a Twix. You can put it in a Twix. I mean, who knows if that sticks? I just hearing it from the youth.
We love that. And Jenny was there too, going like, whoa, check that out. I don't know. Twitter X, you mean that doesn't sound right? The whole X thing. Tweet was such an awesome thing when they had it, you know, and threads are out there. But now it's a repost. But I do kind of like that Twix, although I wonder what Twix, the candy company, would be saying about that. I think they might have a little bit more to say about that. Okay, Jenny, Tom.
Yes.
Wisconsin. The referendum. Who wants to be the first person to say, like, so what is a referendum when that happens? When I see somebody's yard sign saying vote yes on the referendum, what does that mean? Why? What's happening? What's going on?
Well, I'll let Tom go with this, and then I'll talk about some of the historical data.
Okay. Sure. And I think you almost have to start with the history. In the 1993-1994 school year, revenue limits were enacted in the state of Wisconsin. And the revenue limits are based on a per pupil amount of money. And it's increased over time, but Act 10 was mentioned previously. But since around 2010, the per pupil funding under a revenue limit in the state of Wisconsin is about $3,000, according to the Wisconsin Association of School Business Officials, behind inflation. So as that's progressed year after year, school districts, the only way in Wisconsin to increase your funding above this revenue limit number for both operational costs or capital construction costs is to go to referendum. And on an annual basis in the state of Wisconsin, you see more and more school districts that are literally surviving from referendum to referendum.
That's excellent. Jenny, did you want to throw in some of that part you were going to layer onto that? Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, with the districts being largely funded with that combination of state and local property taxes, these mixes of revenues, when it's local property taxes, it really creates a disparate situation in the state too, where wealthier communities are able to invest more of their local dollars into their schools. So it kind of exacerbates those joy gaps and opportunities for kids. And then also, we've just seen a dramatic increase in the number of school districts that have been having to go to these local referendums around the state. So in the spring, there was about 103 referendums between the February and April ballots, and they pass at about a 60% rate. And for this fall now, we're expecting to be about 54 referendums, so a little bit less. It is a presidential election year, so in these odd number elections, or even number, they're more likely to pass, right? And so that type of thing, voter turnout really has a impact on school referenda outcomes, but we have seen a decline in that percentage. You know, people have self-taxation fatigue, and our school doors have become like really hotbed places for these conversations about like what the taxpayer is getting out of your public schools without thinking about how important it is for the community to be pouring into the schools, because what's in the schools but our kids, right, in the future. So people's conversations have really taken a turn away from kids in schools and opportunities to learn, and it's become like a very political conversation around taxation and what we're getting.
And just one other thing, underneath that hard cap of a revenue limit, each school district in Wisconsin is funded on a mix of local property taxes and state funding to get to the revenue limit. And the really interesting thing about that mix is that it's not necessarily an accurate picture of the community. So the school district that I serve has one of the highest percentages of students on free and reduced price lunch in the state. We just certified next year at 70%. But in the funding formula, we look wealthy because we have a lot of property value. We really just have a lot of property. We're a large geographic school district that serves a relatively small student population. We have a lot of property value behind each student we serve. So that creates an inequity in how we're funded. So our local taxpayers this year are funding 78% of the revenue limit, and only 22% comes from the state. And in other districts in the state, that number is inverted because they have less property value behind each student they serve. And I know that's somewhat complex, but it's also part of the story.
Yeah, I mean, just that concept right there, Tom, a little bit about that. I mean, just I mean, got to tell you, it's the first time I've heard about that, the kind of reverse property versus in the number of students versus the property. As you talk about that, tell me a little bit more about that. I need to help me get more of understanding.
Sure. So school districts have this hard revenue limit that they can only raise money up to that revenue limit. And it's kind of like a glass of cola you'd get at a fast food restaurant. Cola would be the good stuff that comes from the state. And the ice is local property taxes. So each district in the state of Wisconsin, and there are over 420, has a different mix of local property taxes and state funds to reach that hard cap revenue limit. In districts like ours that have a lot of property behind each student, we have about $1.5 million behind each student we serve, get penalized, even though our student population is very poor, we get penalized in the state funding formula because we look like a very wealthy school district.
Mm. On that too, just putting that out there, I mean, has there been discussions to say like, wait a minute, this shouldn't be this way? I mean, it sounds, as you're talking to me, Tom, it sounds like, wait, well, then let's fix that.
In when revenue limits were enacted in 1993, the 1993-1994 school year, then Governor Thompson said that they should be reviewed and revised within 5 years. And we're still waiting.
Hmm. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Yeah, check it out, though, too. We're talking to Tom and Jenny, Wisconsin Public Education Network referendum. Yeah, it's one of those things that we need to learn so much more about. The socials, yes, Facebook, Twitter, Busted Pencils. More when we get back.
Anarchist.
You're listening to Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
You know Ignite Glass and Gifts' 3 locations in Madison, but you can also shop igniteglassandgifts.com. You'll find grinders, lighters, collectibles, hand-blown glass.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. An inmate at the state prison in Green Bay is dead. Corrections officials say it appears his cellmate killed him Tuesday. It's the latest in a string of inmate deaths at Wisconsin's oldest maximum security prisons since last year. The presidential campaign returns to battleground Wisconsin. Last night in De Pere, Republican running mate J.D. Vance spoke against the high cost of living.
Wages have failed to keep pace with the price of groceries, the price of housing. So you've got people working harder and harder, feeling like they can't get ahead.
De Pere Democratic Assembly candidate Christy Welch blames businesses for keeping costs high after the pandemic.
The term that a lot of people have probably heard, but, you know, that is referred to as greedflation.
She's running against Republican Benjamin Franklin. Donald Trump campaigns in La Crosse tonight. Civic Media has special coverage starting at 6. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
This is news from WMDX Madison. I'm Savannah Tome Olson. In an update to a story we brought you yesterday, Fitchburg police have identified the person they believe is responsible for vandalizing Dream Court. Multiple times this summer, someone has driven over the basketball court at Western Hills Park. Fitchburg police put out a surveillance photo of the car from a neighbor's security camera. That truck was really distinctive. It had a red cab and a black bed. Well, after police put out that photo, they got a tip that led them to a Madison 19-year-old. That suspect will likely be charged with criminal damage to property. The Parks Department will now get to work soon, fixing the court. And Amazon will be using local builders to create its new warehouse in Cottage Grove. According to the Cap Times, state and local leaders were pushing for the giant to use local contractors and companies. The distribution center will be at the corner of County Highways TT and N. It'll be 3.4 million square feet and create 1,500 jobs. They're expected to break ground next month. And that's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tome Olson. This is WMDX News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Sometimes the network can't afford not to bring a show back, such is the case with Ted Lasso on Apple TV. That's right, Lasso fans. The show that helped us all get through COVID might be coming back for another season. Series co-creator Bill Lawrence said in a recent interview that several of the cast members have agreed to return, but there is no word yet on whether or not Jason Sudeikis will come back as the title character. Sudeikis is one of the show's creators as well. Deadline.com reports that they believe Sudeikis is already in, which would only leave one non-committal cast member, Juno Temple. Stay tuned. Disgraced actor Armie Hammer says he is selling his truck because he can no longer afford the gas. Hammer says he loves the truck he treated himself to in 2017 intensely. In an awkward Instagram video Hammer posted, it was hard to decipher if he was talking to his truck or the audience at times as he described his love for his vehicle. He added that his kids will miss the truck, but they are adaptable. I wonder if they've heard the cannibalism accusations. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Scattered showers and thunderstorms this evening, some severe with large hail, damaging wind gusts, and heavy rainfall. Rain diminishing overnight, lows upper 60s. Pleasant temps and sunshine ahead for Friday and the holiday weekend. Right now it's 80.
Matt Nair on air.
The hour-long rambling from former President Fruit Loops. I think they keep putting him out there as a distraction. What they don't want us talking about is Project 2025.
If you don't think that Trump has anything to do with this, there are 14 hours of videotape starring former staffers of his, and there's no way he didn't know about this, period.
Matt Nair on air, weekdays at 11 on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app. The John and Gordy Show.
And they also call it a sturgeon moon, I guess.
Well,
easier
still
to catch
sturgeon
in August.
I'm sure Brittany goes fishing for sturgeon. Right, Brittany?
I'm scared of sturgeon. I have a fear of fish, and my toes are always a neon color, so I have a fear that these sturgeon are just going to come right after my toes.
Weekday morning, 6 until 8, on Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX and on the Civic Media app.
Maggie Dawn.
Fred Gutenberg, whose daughter was killed in the Parkland shooting, joins me next. We'll talk about why Derek Van Orten is unfit to serve another term in U.S. Congress.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons at 2.
And we're back. This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. We are here with great guests from the WPEN. We're talking about referendum, school funding 101. We're deep in it. We're getting great information. Just want to put a notification out there for those folks listening live on the radio or on the Civic Media app. If you're following the discussion and you want to stay with it, we might get interrupted because, you know, there's a certain guy who's running for office who's going to be in La Crosse doing a town hall pretty soon. And live coverage will cut to that. And we'll continue on the stream. So if you want to bounce over and follow on the stream, you can on Facebook or on X or on whatever the medium is that you follow on. You could keep live with the WPEN guests. And if you're also interested in following that La Crosse event, well, it will cut live to that. And you can come back around and you'll be able to listen to this recording on the Civic Media webpage later after you've digested whatever he says in La Crosse. But we are here. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, school funding, referendums 101 with our great guests from the Wisconsin Public Educators Network. We got a caller. So we were just talking about how schools are school funding is tied directly to property taxes. And we got a caller, L.A. Tom, on the line. L.A. Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Not real happy to hear about Dom and Crute today, but that's another story that hopefully I'll fight another day. But I wanted to ask Tom or Jenny, in terms of this idea of property taxes being the way that schools are funded, can you tell me when that started? I've tried to research it. I don't know where in the government that started. I think it's ridiculous. Because obviously if you don't have nice homes and you don't have big houses that have more property tax revenue in there, your school is not going to get that type of love, so to speak. And I think that we should all strive for equity, equality as well, but equity between our school systems. Especially, I went to a public school in Durand, Wisconsin. I live in Los Angeles now. But yeah, I think it's something that I want to know what the early things of that were. And also, I did want to respond. I also wanted to say that there's a Glenwood City superintendent. There was a forensic audit done, and it revealed that Glenwood City District lost more than $300,000 to fraudulent activities. And I think we should really make a stride for having people that are actual teachers become superintendents.
Yeah, L.A. Tom. Okay, Tom, want to help L.A. Tom?
And I, you know, I don't know the answer to that. I know in some of the education history classes I took, small communities started funding one-room schoolhouses in the state of Wisconsin. And I don't know exactly, and maybe Jenny does, when it became much more formalized and funded primarily through local property taxes.
Well, for the first about 100 years of our country, this federal government had a very hands-off approach to public education and you know, democratized education across the state and or across the states, right? States' rights, mm-hmm. regional, local control. And so actually I was in Wisconsin in 1911 was the first time a local property tax was used and raised strictly for public schools. And that set off the firestorm. So by the 1940s, it became kind of the norm nationwide to start with the baseline of local property tax.
Hmm. I mean, you think about it, right? It you can there's some form of a, well, it sounds commonsensical, logical. You know, you live in the district, you have some property, we're going to fund, we have a public school system that is supposed to be there for everybody. So if you're there, you know, how do you contribute part of your property taxes? Like, I could just see some people sitting around going, that makes sense. You know, to do it in that direction. What doesn't make sense, though, here is when you hear Tom talking about what's happening in his district and or even the points now, too, of this whole idea of property taxes and the realities of saying it's like, how do we fund public schools? And we've also heard the words equity and equality and the differences even between those two terms, equality and equity. Johnny, you were putting that in the chat.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, There it is. Wait, what's that sound? That's the bell we hear every day here on Busted Pencils. You know, we are just about to get into that equality and equity bit and ask Tom a little bit more about what's happening in the district, because I think that's a really good thing for listeners to follow along with why referendums exist and how important they are to our quality schools. But here we do this every day, 6:40, the bell rings, and we have democracy in action recognition. And it's actually couldn't be more perfectly timed, because the Republican candidate for presidency just landed and is going to be in La Crosse, you know, doing a town hall. And there are all kinds of really great folks at Civic Media who are hitting the ground, and this will cut to live coverage of that. So today's democracy in action is actually those hardworking journalists all over that are on the ground helping us get truthful information, right? So truth is a core democratic value. And that's that the government and the citizens should not lie, and we should hold each other accountable to honesty. And so one of the ways we do that is through really good on the ground journalism. So Civic Media is there. So if we cut to that, folks, you can continue to listen to us on the stream, because we have a really great conversation going right now with Tom and Jenny about school funding and referendums. And there was this thing brought up. I mean, Tom's talking about, hey, in terms of property tax, let me see if I understand this, Tom, because I'm the common listener for a minute here. And I'm saying, hey, that doesn't sound right. Wait, so you have high property tax, they're high property values. So you have this illusion that you should be flush with cash in your schools. But that's not the case, because there are a lot of children who are living in conditions that we would categorize as they're experiencing poverty. And so they have high needs in our schools. So can you everyday language, my neighbor's confused, Tom, explain this phenomena.
Sure. The school district that I serve currently, the property values are not high. We're a very poor school district. We're also a very large school district, very low property value school district. So we serve 1,300 students in approximately 500 square miles. And what we have is not a lot of property value per se behind each student in the state funding formula. We just have a lot of property. So in the state funding formula, because we have less than 3 students per square mile, we have over $1.5 million worth of property value behind each student. But the students we serve and the families that live in our district are relatively economically disadvantaged. So 70% of our student population qualifies for free and reduced price lunch. But within the state funding formula, we look wealthy.
I get it, Tom. So now I understand it. So those students and their families, they don't own the property. And in fact, so this makes while there's a lot of property, it's not lived on or owned by or in some way profiting families and of that community. So the students attending school, this makes a ton of sense. And that property isn't necessarily generating revenue that goes through taxes into the schools.
Not at all.
This makes more sense. So you see, this system is really not a good system. Hence why I'm guessing here for like referendum 101, like you said, there's a lot of ice in the cup, right? And so we got a really watered down, I love that metaphor you used. We got a really watered down, cup of Coke, and that's absolutely not cutting it for what the kids need in education terms. So when that happens, in a sense, that's referendum 101. We have to turn to passing a referendum, right? Is that the right understanding? Tom's nodding, so.
Yeah, that's correct. And the only way that you can generate funds above this revenue limit, that's $3,000 per student behind inflation, is to go to referendum.
So if we can continue on this line of 101, Jenny, Tom, whoever, like keep elaborating, because this is really illuminating it for folks. So what's the referendum process then? So we now know why we have to go to it, but let's talk about the process for listeners.
Basically, a school district, your board of governance has to elect and agree that a referendum is something you want to pursue. Then they work with some lawyers to make sure that the ballot question or questions is extremely lawyerly. It doesn't have to be so lawyerly, but they get awfully complicated sometimes, because What happens is whatever that word, whatever word choices those are the things that you can spend the money on. So if you go and look on our Department of Public Instruction's website where they'll list out all of the referenda questions in the state, you'll notice really intense language in them because they're trying to pack it in to make sure that however that money, if it comes to them, is being spent on things they actually need. There has been a dramatic increase in the number of operational referendas in the state. So those are districts that are electing just to keep the lights on or to keep their staff paid versus, you know, field houses and things like that. And some of this disparate nature of school funding is like currently Arrowhead High School, which is one of the highest performing, wealthiest areas of the state, they're going to referenda because the actual school facility was built in the 70s, the high school, and it's deteriorating. They don't have a great, you know, they don't have an ADA compliant auditorium and some other spaces in the building, but they have this a massive, amazing, beautiful sports facilities that wrap around that actually draw in a lot of students, right? Which is revenue. But families in that community are not believing the situation right now that they actually need the referenda in order to make these upgrades to the physical educational building of it, right? Because the football field looks so gorgeous and the field house is so amazing. But all of that came from private donors. So sometimes the private donor investment in some of those outside things really can exacerbate this problem of getting the community on board to support the school because it looks real flashy from the outside. But on the inside, they're showing pictures of mold, you know, deteriorating walls and things like that. So basically your school district has to, your governance has to elect to go to referenda. The other hitch in this giddy up too is like once the district agrees to go to referenda and writes this ballot questions, all they can say is here are the questions and we're doing this. The district isn't allowed to tell you how to vote. It's hard and it makes people really nervous, the legalities of how full-throated they can be about these situations. So the school district really needs a yes committee, which is a committee of community members, civic leaders that will step forward to really promote the yes side of it because they can go into other meetings and say, vote yes for this, right? And that's where Wisconsin Public Education comes in. And I think in this next bit, Tom can tell you a little bit about how our team has supported school districts around the state in their yes committees.
Awesome. That's exactly what I was wondering. I was like, I think Tom is saying he has a really great example of the relationship between WP and a district needing to go to referendum.
Yes. So in the fall of 22, during the 22-23 school year, we knew that a previous five-year referendum was going to fall off the table. And we also knew that every year our deficit continues to grow because our funding isn't keeping pace with inflation. And so we created a very legal-like referendum question. It has to be done 90 days before the election, and there's a lot of legal processes to follow. And we went to referendum for a little over $12 million over a four-year period in the fall of 22. And there were about 5,500 voters in our area. And we lost that referendum by about 800 votes. And we needed the money. So we turned around and went right back to referendum in the spring of 23, same amount of money, but we engaged more with WPEN and they helped us organize our community. They helped us re-message what we were doing. And we were able to basically asked for the same amount of money with WPEN's help in the spring of 23 and were able to pass that referendum by over 200 votes. So we actually switched about 1,000 votes in a very short period of time.
Man, great story there. It's Wisconsin Public Education Network on Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Hey, yeah, right now, when we get back, you're only going to have Busted Pencils on the socials, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, not new. Okay. Just Facebook.
Just on Facebook and YouTube for Busted Pencils.
Okay. Busted Pencils, Facebook, YouTube. You can come back and get us live. Man, we got more.
Man.
Mad Radio 92.7 FM, home of the John and Gordy Show.
It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
Trigvi Olsen, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. They put out fake AI photos of
Taylor Swift saying that she endorsed him.
Right. And Trump retweeted that. And of course, all of that is untrue.
Don't mess with the Swifties. You'll have my daughters showing up.
I mean, it's a whole new level of Swift boating.
Trump and Las Vita might get Swift boated already. Taylor Swift boated.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Mad Radio, WMDX, Madison's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
This is Wisconsin Decides 2024 special coverage. The Civic Media news and political teams bring you analysis of the Trump campaign's town hall in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Now, from the Civic Media headquarters in Madison, broadcasting across the state, here's Civic Media News Director Terry Bell.
Thank you and welcome to Civic Media's special coverage of former President Donald Trump's town hall meeting in La Crosse. I'm Terry Bell. I'm joined at the anchor desk by Todd Alba. James Kelly is at the La Crosse Center, and we will bring you everything tonight that transpires, and maybe we won't bring you everything. We'll see about that. But this town hall, Todd, is billed as, and this is according to the Trump campaign, an opportunity to, quote, meet with Wisconsinites to listen to their concerns and share his promising agenda to make America affordable again. And again, that's from the Trump campaign. So this will be a bit different than the rallies that we're accustomed to Donald Trump holding in Wisconsin.
Yeah, Terry, good evening. And good evening, everybody. It's going to be an interesting night, I think. And again, taking the former president at his word, we'll see what, understand it's a full crowd there at the La Crosse Convention Center downtown. It seats 8,000, but that depends on the configuration. They take a lot of chairs out, whatnot, when they have these presidential visits, as other people in this broadcast could attest to. But I think overall, Terry, I think what it really says to me, as someone who grew up in Southwest Wisconsin like yourself and spent a lot of time there, is the importance of not only Wisconsin, but Western Wisconsin as well. We saw Vice President Kamala Harris go to this very same location in La Crosse at the Convention Center back in April when she at that time was running for re-election as vice president. Boy, how much things have changed since then.
Things have changed dramatically. One thing is the same, though, and that is the fact that the 3rd District, Western Wisconsin, is probably the purplest of all the 8 congressional districts in Wisconsin, and why you're seeing so much attention paid to it. Typically, up to this point, we have seen the Democratic campaigns go to Madison and Milwaukee, and the Republican campaign go to places like Waukesha and Green Bay. That is changing a bit now, and we're seeing more attention paid to La Crosse and Western Wisconsin. Good reason for that. The 3rd District is one of 5 congressional districts in play that could flip the majority of the U.S. House of Representatives. Wisconsin is a state that's also very important in control of the U.S. Senate, so one of a very few seats, I think maybe down to 2, that are important for flipping control of the United States Senate. Obviously, Wisconsin's electoral votes are important in the race for president. It could be 3 states. So Donald Trump has to win either Wisconsin, Michigan, or Pennsylvania in order to cut into what Kamala Harris has is exactly 270 votes when you figure in the states that she ought to win, plus Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. So if Donald Trump can cut into that blue wall, that's his best chance to win, and that's why you're seeing so much of the campaign in Wisconsin. In fact, J.D. Vance was in De Pere last night. We suspect that campaign stops in Wisconsin will be a weekly event right up until the election in November. We want to bring in James Kelly. He is at La Crosse Center, our Civic Media Eau Claire Chippewa Falls Bureau Chief. James, are you there?
Hey, how's it going?
Fantastic, James. Give us a flavor of what you've been there for several hours now.
Oh, yeah. It's been a few.
Okay. Tell us what you've been able to see, who you've talked to, and what they've had to say.
Well, earlier when I came on, I mentioned that the energy has been kind of reserved here, waiting for that 6 o'clock Trump speaking time, which was obviously pushed back. Now they've brought some more people out onto the main stage here, so the energy's starting to amp up a little. There's been some pretty enthusiastic USA chants. There's been a lot of singing along. There was even a wave at one point.
I should mention that the plane, the former president's plane, touched down about 15 minutes ago. He's running behind schedule. He was at his previous campaign stop into the early evening, so things are running a little bit behind. That's why we didn't start precisely at 6 as we had expected we would. But we are going to bring you the former president's town hall as soon as they begin. His moderator tonight, this whole event will be moderated by former Democratic Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, who has since become she ran for president in 2020 as a Democrat. Now she is one of Donald Trump's foremost supporters. So it'll be interesting to not only hear from her, but see how she handles this. Normally, you're seeing more town halls being moderated by a friendly moderator, not necessarily by a network anchor or anybody like that. So it'll be interesting to see just how she conducts this town hall.
No, it definitely will be. And these things, again, you're pointing out tonight, and we should note for our listeners and our viewers on the live stream as well, we had every intention to also bring you after this event the vice president, Kamala Harris, and Governor Tim Walz. They are doing a sit-down interview with Dana Bash on CNN tonight. We had anticipated simulcasting with that, but we got late word out of the radio networks that for legal reasons, not just us, but everyone, we cannot do that. We're not able to do that. CNN has claimed exclusivity, as is their right. So just be aware, that's why we're not going to be bringing you that. But to your point, Terry, particularly Trump has tried to find a more friendly audience, and perhaps we could bring in our friend Trigvi Olson from the Lincoln Project. Trigvi, you've had a lot of experience of this. For those that don't know, you're a former Republican, worked on presidential campaigns like John McCain and others. Tell us a little bit about these things, town halls, how they differ from debates, and why Trump would want somebody like Tulsi Gabbard there tonight.
Well, you know, to Terry's point, campaigns have pivoted. Typically, you know, in a bygone era, you would want to have the credibility of a neutral journalist asking the questions. But campaigns, and particularly the Trump campaign, have become very... Trump is the ultimate show.
He's back. You're back. You just froze up. The signal froze up for a second.
I was just saying, to Terry's point, one of the things that we're seeing is that campaigns are trying to control things rather than having like a neutral journalist. And so Tulsi Gabbard is like, you know, she's friendly territory. Donald Trump knows the questions. He's going to be able to basically have it gamed out. It's right. Basically like an infomercial.
Right. There's going to be no major surprise questions coming from the audience tonight.
None.
No, probably not. There will be questions, I understand, but I'm sure they've been pre-screened and very well vetted. Speaking of which, I want to talk to James Kelly. James, you still on the broadcast?
I think we lost him, but we can call back in. James, okay. If you're listening, believe me, we've been there. James and I are up at the Eau Claire event with Harris and Walz here.
That's
outside.
Right.
And you know this, Terry, you've been at some of these things as well with Biden and Harris. You get into these events and the cell towers get overwhelmed. So we'll try to reestablish contact with James Kelly.
Very good. So, yeah, what we are expecting is a very friendly atmosphere for the former president. What he intends to talk about, what we are promised he will talk about, is ways to, you know, make life more affordable. And this seems to be a message that is testing very well for the Trump campaign. We're hearing more and more about it all the time, that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are talking more and more about the high cost of living,
right.
which they call inflation, which is, you know, actually trending down. But it still doesn't change the fact that prices are a lot higher than people are accustomed to paying. And frankly, a lot of people can afford to pay.
Yeah, absolutely. Perhaps now's a good time to bring on our friend, and we are proud to say, now colleague here at Civic Media of the Recombobulation area. He is Dan Schaefer, who is the new political editor here at Civic Media. Dan, welcome to the program. Talk a little bit about, because you know these districts so well, Terry and Trigvy and I were talking beforehand about the importance congressionally in this congressional race of Western Wisconsin, but could it trickle down, and do Democrats have a chance of